So glad to have you here to talk about your work as a conductor and musician teacher at the University of Rochester with the Symphony and Chamber Orchestra. And you've been at the University of Rochester for 1 year now, right?
1 year, yes.
And you're working at the River Campus, which I think, although some people know there's a great music program there that's part of the college experience, often it's assumed that music at University of Rochester is Eastman and not that there's a separate life. Can you talk about what the program is and who you're serving there?
Yeah, I would be happy to. So obviously the Eastman School of Music is a part of the University of Rochester, but it's very much geared towards students that want to be performance majors and want to spend their whole life studying just music. And with music being such a demanding field, you really have to make that decision that you just want to study just music and just performance. And so it doesn't necessarily serve this whole other part of our campus community, including our staff and faculty, that have a love for music and they want to actively participate in it while they're studying their sciences, while they're studying engineering, while they're studying medicine or any other liberal arts, subject that they want to study. And so that's really where the music department on the River Campus comes in, is we very much try to reach those students that want music to be a part of their lives, want to continue actively playing, want to better themselves, but may not be studying in music as a major. They might be a minor, but they don't want to give it up. And that's where we step in.
And that probably brings people from a lot of different backgrounds and experiences to your program.
Yeah, which is awesome. I think that's incredible when you can have students that, and we're also open to faculty and staff and community members, the symphony orchestra as well. So when you can bring together so many people that have such diverse backgrounds and experiences, all these pieces of music and the experiences they've had through their lives, it means something different for every single one of them. So you get this narrative of all these stories coming together and all this life experience coming together, which can make it a little intimidating, but also really enriching.
And I did read when you were first coming here a year ago, you'd worked with youth orchestras as well as with professional orchestras, and this is something sort of different than either of them. What's it been like?
This is a little different. So I would say regardless of the ensemble that I'm conducting, I try to treat them professionally, which for me means being respectful and being nurturing and caring about them, but also having high standards and not wanting to deviate from those standards. So in that sense, I like to think that the work that I was doing when I was in Canton with the Canton Symphony, which is a professional orchestra, and the Canton Youth Symphony, which was the youth ensemble, is the same as what I'm doing here. It is different. Working with a professional orchestra, there are some standards that are in place that are even beyond musical standards, things relating to very strict union schedules about showing up on time, stopping immediately on time, and expectations for how much work you're going to put in. And also, I was an associate conductor, so I didn't get a lot of time with the orchestra. It was more like we'd have a 2-hour concert, and I'd have 2 hours and 5 minutes to rehearse it. So it was pretty much making sure that we could start and stop together. And this university situation, I think it's much more educational and it's more about the process. You're going to be starting in one place, and by the time you're done, there's going to be a much larger improvement, you hope, than you might even see with a professional orchestra over the course of, the four rehearsals that you have with them. So I like that aspect of it being about the process.
And so you've had 1 year. What are some of the programs you've done and some highlights to talk about?
Yeah, so we have the Symphony Orchestra, which is our largest orchestra. It has approximately 110 members, which is huge. And that has members from the community, staff members, faculty members, and of course students, majors, non-majors, undergrads, graduates. So it's our most diverse ensemble. And since it's also our community ensemble, I feel that it's very important that we do programs that resonate with the community and that the community can stand behind and be interested in. So one of the big things that we did this past year is we performed Cole Porter's ballet Within the Quota, which there are arrangements of it that are published, but the particular arrangement we wanted to do for full orchestra was not published. We had to track it down in a dance museum archives in Sweden. and get it sent to us. And it was definitely not anything that they had played before or heard before that the community had heard in that capacity before. We collaborated with Missy Full Smith and her dance department to put on the ballet, and we paired it with Dvorak Symphony No. 9. So it was really meant to bring awareness to and to create dialogue on the topic of immigration, which of course continues to be a very hot topic and one that we increasingly discuss and debate more frequently each day. So that was one of the programs that we did.
And that is something, you're part of this great sort of humanities and art program at the University of Rochester. I've spoken with Misty and with Nigel Meister from the theater department, and there's also different genres of music as well. So is that some of what you're looking for, more some of that collaboration with the arts and people's lives and different types of arts?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're a liberal arts university. So if you can't do that kind of collaboration and interdisciplinary work in a liberal arts environment, if it's not safe to do it there, then where can you do it? You can't do it anywhere. So I feel that that's something that's really important, especially there's a lot of hot topics with orchestras right now on inclusion, diversity, and how we relate to our communities. And so these aren't issues that are just going to magically fix themselves. You have to take an active role every day in thinking of ways to fix that. And it's not a one-season solution. It's a long-term solution of trying to change the way that you think about classical music and what that means, and almost redefining it.
And what are some of the ways you're looking to manifest that in the next year or season ahead?
Well, I hesitate to say epiphany because that sounds kind of maybe conceited, but I tend to think a lot and get into my own.
Oh, and one sec, just an aside. I think this might be making noise on the microphone.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's okay.
I'll sit on my hands.
I both want everyone to be comfortable. I'm like, it's a soft noise. But anyway, so yes, how does this manifest in the programs we'll hear this next year?
Okay. So I was thinking about this the past summer, and I was thinking about how you increase diversity and how you get more diverse audiences and more diverse programming, and realizing that it isn't something that's just going to happen by itself. And I kind of realized that I feel a lot of orchestras program very protectively, where they think about how they're going to retain the audiences that they already have, and then how they can kind of add people in to the music that they want to essentially program that's the same music a lot of them have been doing over and over again for hundreds of years. And I kind of realized that if you want to have people in your audience that are more diverse and people in your orchestra that are more diverse, you have to reflect that in what you choose. You can't do it after the fact and expect it to work. So I kind of had this idea, which is not, again, it's not a one season solution, but I kind of self-coined it this Mirror Mirror Project, where I want to think about programming to attract the kind of audience that I want, not the kind of audience that I have. And that doesn't mean excluding people or pushing people away. It means being inclusive of all the people. So you have those traditional favorites, but then you balance it with innovative works, which can be new works. It can be works by minority composers and female composers, or it could just be works that by composers we love that we've never heard those pieces before. So I've done a little bit of it this past year, and going into the next season, we have a few things planned that are still in the works, but we definitely have some collaborations. We're hoping to do some things related to the community and bringing awareness of rural poverty in the region, in the area, and definitely have a lot more minority composers programmed for this past season than we did this past season.
And some of these, I don't want to go into specifics if you're not sure about some of them, but it's nice to see Jennifer Higdon included, a great composer. Or again, are these, and this is, it can be off the mic, are these not certain yet, or we shouldn't talk specific pieces, maybe?
Maybe avoid the specifics. The Jennifer Higdon might not happen this mm-hmm. year, which you can feel free to include this if you want. I want to do something big with female composers for the anniversary of the amendment, the 19th Amendment. So I don't I am including a couple female composers, but I also am kind of planning ahead even beyond that. So,
well, and that's, you've landed in a great place in Rochester with our legacy of progressive politics, but also with a place that struggles, like a lot of places. Are we still moving forward on some of these things? So,
yeah, it's a really diverse city, and I'm very excited to be here.
So, and that was, I just want to, I guess, stress at this point in the interview, maybe a strange thing to bring up, but these are not just for the U of R community. We're all welcome to attend these and concerts that you have. I don't know how much there is. People come on or off of campus or see that the university is part of, you know, part of our, what's available to us.
Yeah, everybody is welcome. Our concerts are free, so it doesn't get any better than that. And we certainly welcome members from the community. It's a great way to connect with our community, to see the collaborations we're doing, to learn more about the positive things that the university is doing, and how those students and staff and faculty work together to make those things happen. And, you know, we're always looking for collaborations and ideas, too. So if you're a nonprofit organization, or even if you're not, and you have an idea of some way you would like to collaborate or something that you would love to see brought into the community, we have a lot of flexibility. We have lots of grants available to us as a public, well, private university. So I definitely would encourage people, anyone, to reach out to me and to let us know how we can be a resource for our community.
That's, I also want to talk about you as well, because in addition to this work that you've been doing here now for a year, I think you're someone new to the community that I think people should meet, because there's
Thank
all this
you.
Great energy. And that's sort of, this part of the series is called Musicians of Rochester, like Humans of New York, trying to tell stories of, oh, there's this person, you know, does this. Not to get too meta for a sec. But what can we talk a bit about your musical inspirations? You have an interesting education, composition, as well as conducting, and also psychology and sociology of conducting.
I am, I think, like, probably the opposite of what people think of when they think of an orchestral conductor, I would be guessing, like, physically and in terms of training and just in every way that you can possibly imagine. But I think that, you know, that actually, you know, not to get back too much into the university, but I think that works for a liberal arts university, too, is that I do have a background that I would say is pretty non-traditional. I didn't start in music. I wasn't one of those people that started super young and always knew I wanted to be a conductor. I probably wanted to be pretty much everything but that. I wanted to be a marine biologist. I wanted to be a biochemist. I wanted to do historic preservation. I wanted to be an English major. And I actually started school as an English major in biochem, double major at the University of Connecticut, and didn't make it past 1 year before I was trying out for music programs, for music composition, because that was so important to me. But even then, I was a vocalist. That was my main instrument, so not even an orchestral instrument, although I played trumpet in college as well. But it didn't even occur to me that this was a career path for me, that something I could pursue, and it took a lot of weaving to get where I am today.
What are some of the things that pushed you in this direction then?
Well, okay, so I loved going to concerts. And when I was at the University of Connecticut, we were exposed to a lot of concerts, professional orchestras, very high level, free to students. And I saw the London Philharmonic perform, and I was just blown away. I'd never seen anything like that before. And even though I was going into composition when I got accepted to the Hart School of Music, and I was very anxious to start composing, but I also, like, almost immediately started harassing the orchestral conductor there and wanting to take lessons and just to learn more about this idea of what does it mean to interpret music and to use music as a performing tool for bringing people together. And I realized that that's really what a conductor does, and that just didn't occur to me. And so I'm a pretty social person, or I've become a pretty social person. I admire composers greatly for what they do. They do a lot, especially today, in social justice work as well. But at my young age, I didn't see that, and I wanted that social community connection. And so I kind of gravitated towards this field of orchestral conducting. And it was definitely an uphill battle. I was very behind in my schooling and in my ear training, and I had no idea what I was doing. Sometimes I feel like I still don't have any idea what I'm doing. But you know, every day I've learned more and I've also learned what I don't know. And it just, it means that you can keep growing forever and ever, which is kind of cool.
And that is, I see that, or at least it was listed when you were starting, you were scheduled to teach a class about the symphony and the conductor. Is that you were looking at the history or also some of what is the role of the conductor now?
Yeah, I'll be actually teaching that in the spring. So this upcoming spring, if there are any students listening that want to register for it. And that class is going to be a lot of different things. So it will look at the history of the conductor and the history of the symphony orchestra. It will look at specific conductors, their style, their leadership style, conducting style, different orchestras in our country and around the world. But I also want it to be more relevant. So to look at what are some of the problems that orchestras, especially in our country, struggle with today. How are they overcoming these questions and these problems that they're facing? And, you know, what are some of the administrative roles that exist within an orchestra that if you are a business major, you're an English major, but you still have this love of music and you want to give back, what are some roles both in the orchestra and nonprofit sector in general that you might be able to pursue as a career?
And one of the notable conductors who's being celebrated this year, I think in your programming and in many people's programming, including ours, is Leonard Bernstein.
Yes.
I guess, how has his legacy impacted you? Has, I don't know, we're of a generation that wasn't, oh, I saw the young people's concerts on TV, but he still probably looms large in your musical experience.
Yeah. So I was, I think, 2.5 or 3 when he died. So I was born, but it's not like I was going to concerts or seeing recordings or anything at that time. But my grandmother grew up in New York City. And even she would talk about, you know, the young people's concerts and what that meant to her. And she wasn't a musician. No one in my family really was, but that still resonated with her. And even though I don't think of it in a very conscious way, I think subconsciously I realized that this role that music education can have in the community. And of course, Leonard Bernstein was a fantastic conductor of the highest level, doesn't get much higher than conducting the New York Philharmonic. But I think he's still humbled himself enough to understand the importance of music education and the role that it can play and how it can change people's lives. And I think he had a gift for relating to the average person and being able to speak to audiences in a way that he wasn't putting them down or demeaning them. He was speaking to them and opening them up and letting them into the classical music world. And I think that that idea of how do we let people into our world, how do we make it less exclusive and less elite and less of a boys club and more of a, hey, this is a cultural icon and something that is still alive and vibrant. And how do we bring people into that? I think he had a gift for all of that. And as I realized, like, the many roles that conductors play, I realized that that was one that I was really important to me. So in that aspect, he's been very integral to my development.
And then you'll be playing some of the music he's known for composing as well, right? As part of one of your programs in the fall?
Yes. So like many orchestras this season and last season, we're doing a centennial concert. Tried to get it as close to his birthday as we could. So we're really looking forward to that. And of course, his music is very challenging. So it's more than just, oh, you know, it's Bernstein and it's the right thing to do because it's his centennial. It's really, I think the orchestra is looking forward to the challenge, you know, symphonic dances. That's crazy. So we're all looking forward to that challenge.
I can't get over some of these things that are just so fun to listen to when you sit down to play. Even John Williams in Star Wars, we played in the community orchestra I'm in. Mm-hmm. It's so hard.
Yeah. Yeah. Just because something is, you know, I don't mean to be facetious, but just because something is pleasurable to listen to or enjoyable or makes you tap to your feet, I mean, that doesn't necessarily negate its difficulty in pulling it off. So,
and then along the way, as you mentioned, it was an unusual path for you to become a conductor, the one that makes sense, it seems, in retrospect, which is the funny thing about some of these paths. What are some, I don't know, do you have a couple stories from where you sort of realized something about music, like something that stands out to you, if someone would say, like, this is a clarifying moment?
Oh, boy. Yeah, I think I have a lot of those stories. One of the things I would say is that when I just knew I wanted to be a musician, but I was an undergrad and I hadn't necessarily decided what path I wanted to pursue, I was working for an orchestra that I guess should probably remain nameless, although I'm sure if you tried hard enough, you could figure it out. And we did a summer concert series, and I was working in the box office. And one of the pieces they were doing their, you know, July 4th spectacular, which for whatever reason always includes the 1812 overture. And this patron came up to us. He was a walk-up, so he hadn't bought his tickets ahead of time. And he really wanted to attend, but he was very cautious, and he really was unsure if he would like the experience of listening to a live orchestra. And so I encouraged him to give it a try. You know, it's the 4th of July. How can you go wrong? There are fireworks. You can have picnics, you know, alcohol. Just go for it. Have a good time. And he came back to me afterwards, and I asked him how it was, and he said that he was just, he didn't feel anything, and he was really disappointed in that he didn't think that he would come back to see a live orchestra anymore. And what, of course, I couldn't tell this particular individual is that the rehearsal earlier that day, because we were rehearsing only once, of course, as often happens with Pops concerts, had really been, well, first of all, half of it had been rained out, I think. But the other half, I mean, it just wasn't, you know, I think I can say this now being a professional conductor and an educator, it just wasn't a very good rehearsal. Like, the orchestra was just all over the place. It's nothing against the orchestra. Orchestras have good days. They have bad days. My orchestra does too. This was not one of their good days. And so I just kind of pulled him aside and I said, well, I wonder if you would just consider coming back and trying something else, because maybe it's not that you don't like Tchaikovsky 1812. Maybe you just don't like this version of Tchaikovsky 1812. And he was like, well, what do you mean? Like, there's only one version of the 1812 overture, isn't there? And I was like, no, depending on the day and who's doing it, who's performing it, you can get many renditions of it. And maybe this one didn't speak to you, and that's okay. But maybe another orchestra or another composer another day, when they're more on their feet, would speak to you and resonate with you. And he was just like his face just lit up. And he was like, I've just never thought about it that way. I thought this was just how it is, and that there was something wrong with me. And it made me realize, like, I think as a classical music industry, we do unfortunately kind of put a lot of pressure on our audiences that if they don't like something we're doing, we're kind of subtly sending the message that there's something wrong with you. And there's nothing wrong with you. There's a lot that we can be doing, I think, to reach out to you. And we also have to perform at a higher artistic level. And if we don't do that, then that's on us. We're to blame, not you. So it made me realize, if you want to make those changes to reach out to the audience and make them realize it's not them, then there's really no better way to do it than by being an orchestral conductor.
Amazing. And what are some of the experiences once you then did get to take the podium and be leading an orchestra? I know that in Canton, I was fascinated to read that, you know, you had goals for your orchestra. You grew them artistically, but also just size and reach and scope. So I guess, do you have some experiences from your own leading experience, you know, like a great win or an unusual failure?
Probably both. You know, when I started at Canton with the youth orchestra, there was one at the time, and it was very small. And I will never forget, I tell a story a lot about that experience of coming to them at the first rehearsal. We rehearsed in a basement, really drab and dark, and that was about the spirit of the room when I walked in. I've never seen a rehearsal where the students left all their instruments in their cases, on their laps, until, like, I had to tell them, even putting music on their stand, even saying, you can take out your instrument and practice. They were just that scared and that forlorn that they didn't. They refused. And they wouldn't tune until after I told them, got up and said hi. And I mean, it was really quite overwhelming. And, you know, I love education. I love children and students. And I really wanted, I mean, that broke my heart to see them that way. And so I started immediately working on them, trying to build their spirits. And I was there for 5 years. And by the time I left, we had three orchestras, almost 150 students in the program instead of the 30 that we started with. And they actually won a national award. They were voted Youth Orchestra of the Year by the Classics Alive Foundation in Los Angeles. So I feel like, you know, I hope to have more wins in my future. But if I'm to pick the biggest win right now in my career, to take an orchestra that was that down on themselves and felt that badly about themselves, and to get them national recognition over the course of 5 years was really, that was very humbling.
And then we've already sort of, I think, alluded to it throughout. So what are some of your hopes for, maybe we can sort of put it all together, some of your hopes for the U of R orchestras, the symphony and the chamber orchestra, for the musicians, for you, and then for its role in the community, both the college and the larger community?
Yeah, it's a great question.
It's like an everything question.
It is, but it's a great question. You know, I love the symphony orchestra. I love the chamber orchestra. They have so much potential. And I am amazed every day. And I tell them this. I don't know if they believe me, but I tell them that they're my heroes for putting up with what they're doing. You know, their biology degrees, their physics degrees, and they want to learn, you know, Bernstein symphonic dances in their spare time. I mean, that's incredible to me. And so I think helping them to continue to realize their potential, and not only as individuals, but as an ensemble, encouraging them to play together, to know what that means, and to realize how much nicer it feels when you're playing with a group and when you're all on the same wavelength and you're all doing the same thing. It's not a competition. You know, it's not meant to set people against each other, but to create unity. And I think once you have that, then you can really invite the community, both the campus community and the larger Rochester community, and even beyond that, in. And so I'm looking forward to doing even more adventurous programming. I mean, compared to some of the things I've done with the Youth Symphony in the past, I feel like this past season and the upcoming year are adventurous, but I'm realizing it's not nearly enough to create change and the kind of change that I would like to see, not only in our small slice of the world, but the world at large. So I want to bring in a lot more minority composers, living composers, pieces that they haven't performed before, or that by composers we all know, but their pieces don't get performed necessarily as much, and just to really continue to have them challenge themselves, both as musicians and as intellectuals and human beings.
Well, Rachel Waddell, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And I guess before I turn it off, was there anything else you wanted to add now that while we have the mic that we didn't get in?
Well, all I would add is that we do have a website. And as I said, all of our concerts are free. So if you're interested in seeing what we're doing and you want to come check us out, even if you just want to drop by for an open rehearsal, that's totally fine with me. Just send me an email. Again, I want to be a resource for you if you have collaboration ideas you would like to see or initiate. And of course, the symphony orchestra is open to community members. So if you're a community member, especially if you play the oboe, I hope that you will consider joining us in the upcoming seasons.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Thank you.